Welcome, everybody, to the only official Chelsea FC podcast. Big games stacking up for Chelsea FC, the Women's Champions League final, the FA Cup final, and obviously, there's the banter. That's right, Chelsea drop 1-0 to Arsenal, the London rivals. Doesn't matter, we'll get into that and more, and we'll be joined by Callum Hudson-Odoi. That's right. Tremendous access provided by our partners over at Chelsea FC. Vamos! All right, Chris Whittingham. It's never good to lose to Arsenal, but I think last week probably did more for what we saw this week than the actual match itself. Bit of a rotational squad, if you could read into it. Thomas Tuchel's options a little bit limited because of injury. Arsenal do just enough in that Jorginho with a gaffe that hopefully we got all that bad juju out, because Chelsea have been pretty clean over the last few weeks. But here's my main takeaway, Chris, and this does not do anything to settle my stomach headed into two finals on the men's side, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around Chelsea being a good team, and then you drop a result like that and it's it runs counter to that notion. Chelsea are weird.
Huh.
They're a weird team.
Okay.
It's a bizarre season. It's a pandemic season. I'm not rationalizing this result, but the weird, bizarre sequence of events inside the box where Mount's injured and Giroud hits a crossbar twice. It's a weird side. It might be a side that ends up being a Champions League final, and that actually fits a pandemic season for me. But we had the debate last week. Is this even a top 10 team of the 21st century for Chelsea? I saw nothing in this game against Arsenal that would make me feel strong about them being a top 10 side, but they're a weird team. And I don't think this result is indicative of what might come in the final. People may want to knee-jerk towards it. I see this result. I see what happened last week. I kind of feel like you can only get up for so many games, and this was just a matter of not necessarily a look-ahead game, Chris, because it's a London rival. It was still important for Chelsea. They could have really cemented top four, but you can only get up so many times.
Yeah, and to me, if you're looking for soothing, it would come in the fact that, again, Chelsea play a match in which they didn't give away a... Well, they gave away.
They did.
They gave it away.
I mean, in terms of
defending, and a team broke you down. Yeah. Arsenal did not break down Chelsea for the full 90 minutes.
Arsenal offered nothing.
Yeah, Arsenal Arsenal offered nothing. That's exactly what happened. And so that would be kind of like my feeling of positivity, is that, again, Chelsea were, you know, not clinical in front of goal. I think as the match wore on, they weren't even creating that many obvious goal-scoring chances, whereas I would say in the first 30 minutes, they're pretty good in that respect. Kai Havertz absolutely has to score that opportunity.
Yeah. Get it out now, Chris.
Exactly, and that would be like kind of, if you're talking about a worry going down the stretch on here in an FA Cup final and a Champions League final, it's also what happened in the second leg against Real Madrid. Could have put that to bed 3-4, but they didn't. And that I don't think that's going to be solved between here and the end of the season, so is a miss in a big spot going to cost you? But the one thing I do know is that in big games, Chelsea are not just going to be opened up over and over again and give away chances unless they go a man down, which is the only time that we've seen them really opened up like that under Thomas Tuchel. So if you're looking for positive signs out of this game, it would be that, look, it was two really bad mistakes that cost you the game, and you can't really account for those in matches going forward.
Jorginho, one of his worst performances in a blue shirt, although he's not the midfielder that comes off at halftime.
Yeah.
It's Billy Gilmore. And I was watching this game, and obviously you know I'm in the tank for Billy Gilmore. I thought he played well. I wasn't exactly sure. Yeah. Was this more about getting Callum Hudson-Odoi on?
My theory is that I don't think Jorginho and Billy Gilmore work together. Because if you see, like, there was almost at times like Billy Gilmore was like running circles around Jorginho.
Yeah.
Jorginho was trying to like receive the ball and like Billy Gilmore is just, he's such an enterprising central midfielder. I'm not sure that, I think Jorginho and Conte works. I think Gilmore and Conte works. I'm not sure Jorginho and Gilmore works, because they're both trying to dictate the game in similar ways. And so I think Tuchel was kind of trying to if you're going to take one of them off, you take the one who's less experienced off in a game like that. You certainly could have made an argument that it was Gilmore who should have been allowed to be given free reign of the game, because in the FA Cup, in the game against Manchester City, when he was allowed that, he played pretty well. But I think Tuchel also kind of recognizes, I need Jorginho for the end of the season, and I want to see this result turned around as it goes on.
Did Callum Hudson-Odoi reward the manager's move? Because for me, not necessarily. I kind of was hoping that I would have seen more Billy Gilmore. Like I said, I kind of rated what he did in that first half, and Jorginho didn't really instill confidence in that second half either. The distribution was just off. You're allowed to have an off game. Heaven knows that Jorginho's allowed that, because he was brilliant against Real Madrid. And I see that, and knowing, look, if Chelsea were an out-and-out good team that everybody could agree on, of course I want to maintain positive momentum. And I was having this conversation with a friend that watched a game with me, and he was like, don't you want to keep winning headed into these cup finals? And the cynic in me that is not 100% sold on Chelsea, I'm like, there's positives in this drop result against Arsenal. It's a bit humbling because Arsenal weren't very good. It's one thing to lose to Arsenal's best shot. This was far from it. Not an inspiring Arsenal side whatsoever. You beat yourself here in this game. It's textbook Chelsea. A team locks down defensively against you because they were parking the bus behind the bus in this game for huge moments and stretches in this game. You couldn't unlock them. You couldn't quite unlock them, right? You had the chance. It bounces on the wrong side of the bar. You end up losing. You gift them a goal. Kepa, I thought, did well. That's a nice bit of confidence going into what I think we think is a start for Kepa in the FA Cup.
Yeah, like it felt like one of those things from Tuchel. It's actually a smart bit of management to me, where it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to start him in the FA Cup, let's get him a game in the league so that he can feel a sense of confidence. And that's another position where they swapped out Mendy for Kepa, and I think Kepa's conceded like 5 goals in 8 or 9 games under Tuchel. Like, he is another player who's performed pretty well, and I thought had some good distribution moments as well, particularly towards the end of the match. Arsenal were trying to press them, and he was just calm and played his game.
I agree. The mistake wasn't on him. It was 100% on Jorginho. Kepa does well to salvage it in retrospect. You're like, maybe hold it. You can't think that way if you're a keeper.
The only way that you can maybe say the keeper change affects things is that maybe Mendy's starting position would have been more central had it not been
for
them.
But that's soccer 101.
Oh, no, for sure. Like,
you don't want to be in front of your goal receiving that ball. Yeah. You try to get off. Jorginho putting it on frame. I think Jorginho just mishit it.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
Because you're playing it to the keeper. You're not playing it to the goal. You're not taught that. We're talking about base level soccer here. I think you just mishit it. And that's the reaction you saw when Jorginho threw himself into his own net. You feel for the guy, a mistake.
Yep.
Like I said, get that out. You're going to have a certain number of those in the season. Might as well get one out before you have the big cup finals.
Yeah, and Jorginho has had these before, right? This isn't the first time that he's had those kind of performances, which just seems like...
It always seems like Kepa's on the receiving end of it, too. It never happens to Mendy, really. Or when it happens to Mendy, he gets away with it.
I mean, Kepa has had a run of bad luck on top of, obviously, performances that have merited a change in goalkeeper. But also, I do think that Jorginho has had one or two of these in him. And he will, I think, be the first to put his hand up. And, I mean, I think he will probably in the dressing room be saying, look, guys, I'm sorry. Just wasn't my night. And I'm sure, as you said, he's earned enough credibility with this team, particularly since they changed manager, that he'll still continue to be a leader. He'll still continue to dictate play and be a huge part of what they do.
Yeah, you're talking about a player that's captained this side in previous matches. He's among the leaders in that locker room. It was good to see Giroud get some run and prove that he could still be dangerous. God, that guy's got just such a clinical side to him. He does a lot. The fact that he was able to get that ball on target with that second ricochet in such a tight window.
With his weaker foot,
it's unfortunate it didn't go in, but an impressive bit of football there from him. Christian Pulisic at moments impresses. He was way offside on that second opportunity. Yeah. To me, Kai Havertz got to be looking in the mirror a little bit, and you need to be a little bit more clinical, especially if you're starting ahead of the likes of Timo Werner. That's a book on Timo Werner. What are you offering that's different than Timo Werner? Because I like what Timo Werner offers from a distribution standpoint and a pressing standpoint. If we're looking at what the lineup is going to be, what the starting 11 is going to be headed into these cup finals, I may hold that lack of finishing, that lack of clinicality against Kai Havertz. He needs to be better. He's been a stronger player in the second half of the season. Keep it going. That's a bad mistake. I can't tell you how many highlights I saw of him in the Bundesliga where he takes that ball and he dribbles it all the way into the net.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he was thinking there.
Yeah, I just think it was just like, I'm just going to hit this hard towards the target and like see what happens.
That doesn't work for Chelsea.
Right, exactly. And like, it, you know, you have to, I don't think he picked out a finish. Like, I'm going to hit the bottom corner, the top corner. I'm going to go left or right. It's just, I'm going to hit it beyond Bertrand Leno and see what happens. But yeah, I mean, again, if you want to say it's not Kai, it's Timo, then, you know, Timo certainly has finishing questions as well. So I think, you know, in that situation, and it's so weird to me because Kai is on some good scoring form here.
Yeah.
He's picked out some things like, wow, that was really impressive. It feels like he's kind of found his stride, but that was kind of an early bit of the season Kai Havertz finished there.
Yeah, again, another Chelsea game goes by where they struggle with their finishing and no chances. They went a large stretch of that game without a shot on goal. No chances from outside the box. This is an evolution of the game, and particularly in England, that I'm not a fan of. I like Rudiger, neon green light. Just put it on the frame.
Kurt Zuma had a go.
Yeah, like just make things happen.
Yeah.
Like have a go from the outside of the box. Mason Mount struggling again with his finishing. Get these bad performances out of the way because you have two monster games against Leicester, and I'm not exactly sure which one's bigger. Obviously, there's a trophy on the line for the first one, but you're in the top four if you win that game against Leicester, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though you might have a bit of luck against Aston Villa. It depends what happens in this game against Everton for Aston Villa, but maybe their spot is solidified and they have nothing to play for. So if you have an important match, that final match day of the season, you'll need it more than Aston Villa, and that's always good for you.
And let's also, I mean, none of the teams that we're talking about competing with Chelsea for that top four spot are any kind of consistent, right?
No.
Leicester's just coming off the back of a great result against Manchester United. You play them twice. I imagine you'll beat them at least once over the course of the two games.
Yeah.
I mean, Liverpool have been wildly inconsistent throughout the season. West Ham are just about reaching the end point of what's been a great season for them, so I don't think you need that many more points to lock up the spot.
This podcast is releasing the day of Liverpool Man United, and I don't really trust Man United given what we just saw them throw out against Leicester, but that's a massive game for Chelsea season, almost as big as the one against Leicester a couple days after this FA Cup final. But don't read too much into this result, I would say. I think you can glean some positivity. A humbling come back down to earth after feeling yourself for a little bit. Not that they needed it, because I don't think anyone takes it for granted at Chelsea Football Club. I really don't. All these players have had so much adversity this season and have had to fight for every minute of playing time that they've had. I don't necessarily they go into a match with their heads held high, but I think that this could end up helping them. Just if you're like me and think on the balance of things, you need to drop one of these headed into. Get the loss out of the way now, because you got big ones and you can't afford to lose any of those.
You're coming off a Champions League win over Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
You've beaten Manchester
and
City.
An emotional win.
You've beaten Manchester City twice in a month to get to the FA Cup final and almost secure your place in the top four. If you're going into this set of games, home Arsenal, away at Man City, and you say you take 3 points from those, okay, if you switch up the order, you feel better about it. If you play a close result against Man City, you win, you lose, and you beat Arsenal at home, you feel good. So why wouldn't you feel good off the back of losing to Arsenal, other than the fact that Arsenal have had a bad season? You want to beat your London rivals. Like, I'm not trying to say that Chelsea shouldn't have the standard of reaching this point, but given the consequences of the defeat, I wouldn't lose sleep over it.
I'm with you, Chris Whittingham, and hopefully this means Chelsea. The last time Chelsea dropped a result against West Brom, they ended up playing their best stretch of football of the season, I think, in terms of just their tactics and their performance. And they wasted a few chances against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
let's be honest. But hopefully a bit more clinicality headed into these final matches of the season that are all going to be absolutely massive. Let's talk to Callum Hudson-Odoi. How does that sound, Chris Whittingham? This is
that
sounds lovely. This is a player that obviously a lot of Chelsea fans hold in high regard, have a lot of high hopes for, an academy product. And I've never had the opportunity to speak to him. So when he came across our table in terms of being able to speak to, I jumped at the chance and we got him at a good time. His emotions were running high. He had a smile on his face, a beautiful smile on his face. Pleasant young man. Callum Hudson-Odoi joins us next.
Introducing Perfect Play, the most advanced football training app available. Developed with and used by the Chelsea FC Academy. built with innovative player tracking technology, featuring masterclasses from some of football's biggest stars, offering world-class, personalized football coaching. So train with the best and become the player you want to be. Start training for free. Download on the App Store now.
Callum, thank you, number one, first and foremost, for being so generous with your time. We really appreciate it. We know it's an exciting time for you, so the fact that you're taking just 15 minutes out of what is an exuberant day for you means a lot, because I know it's an exciting moment in time for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think all of us are extremely delighted. I think that obviously it's a massive moment for all of us as a team, especially obviously it's probably all of our first time Champions League final as well. So it's definitely a massive feeling for us. We're all delighted, excited, and obviously can't wait.
We'd like some organic banter to start the interview, so that was very prim and proper by me. What I meant to say, Callum, is holy you're in the Champions League final, Callum Hudson-Odoi, an FA Cup final in Wembley against Leicester City, a Champions League final in Istanbul against Manchester City, an unbelievable ride of emotions, not just in that competition, but throughout the season in your very young career. You burst onto the scene under Maurizio Sarri in cup competitions, proved to be a valuable asset. There's all sorts of big club interest in your services. You have a conversation with Frank Lampard. You decide to extend with Chelsea, bouts with fitness and injuries and adversity. And then Thomas Tuchel brings you in and leans on you very early on in a new position. What can you describe over? It's been a crazy couple of years here at Chelsea. Chaos and trophies. That's what the old adage is. How can you describe just the last couple of years wearing that blue shirt?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's been a roller coaster. Definitely. I feel like obviously there's been a lot of ups. There's been downs as well. By the end of the day, I've got to take everything as a stride and take it on as a learning curve. I think that everything that I do has got to be taken positively. I think to myself that any situation that happens, whether it is good or bad, I just want to take it positively and try and move on from it. So, yeah, I think it's been a crazy 2 years, but I've enjoyed every moment of it. I think like, it's always a different learning thing for me, especially playing a new position as well, which is nice to find out something new about it and trying to adapt to and try and play in that position as well, which is nice for me. But as I said, I'm enjoying it. As I said, enjoying the football right now in the Champions League final, so in the FA Cup final also. It's nice feelings to think about and to know that we're in it and we have to try and win it.
Now, you mentioned ups and downs. Let's focus a bit on the ups first. So we're talking to you on the day after Chelsea beat Real Madrid to get to the Champions League final. Can you put us in the dressing room? We got a little bit of a snapshot of it from Edouard Mendy on his Instagram. A lot of jumping up and down, a lot of celebrating. Can you just explain to us what that scene is like on the bench, on the pitch, in the locker room afterwards? Just put us there.
I think it was a ride of emotions. I think obviously everybody in the team celebrated in a different way. I think some players were crying. Some players were just jumping up with emotion. I think it's always a different feeling. I think some people in their careers don't expect to get into that certain stage of a final in the Champions League. So especially when you've made it this far, I think your emotions just get the better of you. And I feel like everybody has the right to cry or scream loud as they want, because it's a different feeling. You don't always get to be in the Champions League final, you know what I mean? So the moment you get there, I think everybody's been delighted. I think, as I said to you, players were crying. Loads of players were jumping up and down. I think, like, all of us, just when the final whistle blew, we just all went crazy, because obviously it's a big emotion for us, especially as a team that we worked really hard to try and get in this position and we've got here. So definitely a lot of high emotion of happiness and joy and a lot of tearful players as well.
I can't even imagine. Because even for being so young, the last few years have been such an experience for you. Also, in the midst of all that adversity and the highs and lows, there's a pandemic. You're not allowed to share this with the fans. So really, that burst of emotion is in that room. And I imagine validation is a big presiding emotion, because that extension, validated, great decision. I'm in a Champions League final, learning a new position, attacking it, embracing new tactics. Every single decision that you've made, with an appearance in a Champions League final against Manchester City now, you feel big-time validation, I imagine.
No, I'm obviously, you feel very humbled and honoured to get the opportunity to even play the games when you play them. I think to myself that every opportunity I get, I'm always blessed and honoured to get the opportunity to play. So when I do play, I try and give it my all every game and try and obviously, you always try your best to help the team as much as possible to win the game, or you try and contribute if I have a goal and assist to try and help the game, making that decisive tackle to win the game, you know what I mean? So, especially as a team, I feel that we're obviously very humbled in a way to know that we're in the Champions League final, FA Cup final, we're in the top four for the Premier League. So, right now, all of us, to say myself as well, are just honoured to get the opportunity to keep playing, keep working hard, keep showing the fans that we're fighting as much as we can for the club to try and win as many trophies as we can. And we're all, as I said, delighted to be playing games and being in finals. I think that's what all this meant for. I think, especially in European competitions, you want to be making finals. You want to be playing in the biggest stages in front of everybody watching. So, as I said, it's definitely a massive feeling for us, and we're delighted to get there.
Now, Callum, I thought one of the more poignant shots that the television cameras caught was of you, Tammy Abraham, Billy Gilmore, and all the Academy guys, Mason Mount, when he came off, all coming through this together. How much of a connection do you guys have? And how much did you guys get an opportunity to share a moment and go, wow, we've done the whole journey from the bottom to the top?
No, definitely. I think it's a great feeling, I think, for all of us, especially coming from the Academy. I feel like when you come up from there, when you are there, you especially dream a lot about becoming a first team player and playing for the club that you've been at all your life. So you think to yourself, what do you do to get there? What can you do to get there? So the opportunity that when we got here and obviously we're playing, I think it's a feeling where you're like to yourself, wow, it feels so real because you've been dreaming about it. You've been watching all the players playing in front of you. And then now you're playing up there with them in the same team against other players, or you're playing for the club that you support all your life, been with your life, and then now you're all there. So I think all of us embrace it. We take it in every day, and we know that the opportunity that we've got is amazing. We have to try and take it every time we get the opportunity to play. So I think all of us as a team, just all the Academy boys especially, know that it's a special, extra special feeling to know that we've come up all the way and now we're here. So we're trying to maintain ourselves and try and stay and keep playing games and keep hopefully winning trophies, winning matches for the club. And you do it for the club as well, but you do it for yourself as well to know that you've done it all the way and now you're there. So go ahead and enjoy every moment of it.
We've got a good positive vibes only thing here, so I'm going to take it into just a little adversity because I haven't really gotten to the opportunity to hear you in your own words describe the physical adversity you face. Here in America, the Achilles injury was known as a killer in the NBA. If a player got an Achilles injury, you could pretty much write them off. Now, the science is advancing. You came back from that Achilles injury very quickly, and it obviously had an effect. Can you describe what your body was going through as you continued to work your way back from such a difficult injury at a young age?
Yeah, of course. As I said, I think it's one of the things that when you're young, you don't like to receive, especially you never want to have an injury in your career anyway. So it's one of those things where I was very distraught. I think, obviously, I was disappointed because, especially at the time where we was as well, as the Europa League semi-finals was coming up. We had big games coming up, and I was a bit, as I said, distraught because of the feeling that I was doing well in the season, everything was going well, how I planned it. I had my England called up, everything was going great. And then to get injured like that was very sad. So, as I said, I had good people around me, had a family who was always taking care of me, making sure I was getting back day by day, getting the things that I needed, everything that I wanted that was in the boundaries that would help me get. And as I said, it was a good feeling to know the people around you were trying to help you get back as quick as possible. And then you have the team at Chelsea, who the physios were there every day in, day out, pushing me to make sure that I was coming back. Every step by step, they'll make sure I'll do it as how I felt comfortable, not anything rushed, as I felt comfortable, how I was feeling in my leg. So it was a good feeling to know that I had all these people around me helping me, pushing me to get back to where I was. And obviously, when I've come back, as I said, it takes a while for the injury to fully heal because, as I said, it's a long-term injury, which could, as you said, it could kill a player's career. You know what I mean? So especially for myself, it's hard because when I used to run on my toes. So it was a different kind of technique I had to get used to and trying to figure out different ways to run. But as I said, now I'm feeling, as I said today, more comfortable every day as the day goes on. I'm feeling more strength in my leg, my calf. And as I said, just got to keep building. Hopefully everything goes as I planned and falls fine.
We've seen quotes from Thomas Tuchel speaking about Christian Pulisic's injury troubles, if you can call it that. Trust your body. And I've heard people talk about the Achilles injury, and one of the hurdles in overcoming this injury is the mental hurdle to just trust your own body and know that an injury like that won't happen. Did you struggle with that, at least early on when you were trotting back on the pitch? You mentioned having to retrain your body on how to run different ways. Have you eventually gotten back to where you feel like you were before?
No, definitely. I feel like at the start, when I first came back, I felt like I had a lot of thoughts in my head thinking, am I going to be the player that I was? Am I going to run the same? Am I going to be able to dribble players, be explosive as I used to be? All those thoughts were in my head, of course, because it's an injury where you think to yourself, it's taking a lot of muscle out your calf. So there's a lot of strength that's missing. So you need to get it back. So I thought a lot of stuff about that. But as time went on, I kept thinking to myself, you know what? It's more in the mind at the end of the day. If you're mentally strong and you feel physically strong, nothing will get in your way. So I had strong mentality all the way through, knowing that I'm going to be the same person that I was. As I said, I had my family around me, pushing me, telling me you're going to be the same people. The players around me were telling me the same thing. Coaches, everyone was telling me the same thing. So it was giving me the confidence to know that when I come back, I'll be the same. I'll be hungry and ready to come back and just do what I was doing before. And as I said, yeah, so I had the right people around me to push me. And as I said, it's a mental thing as well, definitely.
Do you feel like you might have even evolved or gotten better as a result? Because if you're kind of going along one path that relies on your body being physically perfect, then you just kind of pursue that path. But do you almost have to adjust a little bit for the fact that maybe your body isn't exactly the same until you get to that full fitness and maybe you developed a greater tactical sense or different skills to kind of help you grow?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously when my injury came, it was a different thing. I had to try and adjust. I had to adjust in different ways to obviously protect my Achilles as much. So I was trying different ways of, as I said, running. I was trying different ways of finding out new ways of dribbling, different skills, not just different ways of dribbling in terms of like finding different ways to beat players, but I was just finding different ways of kind of protecting my Achilles at the start because I didn't know if anything could happen again or if I had another injury like that, would it ruin my career completely? So there was different ways of thinking, but as time went on, as I said, my mentality was strong and I knew that, you know what, at the end of the day, I've got a lot of time on my hands, you know what I mean? I've got a lot of days where I can work on it, keep going to the gym, keep pushing myself. So I had the confidence knowing that I don't need to change anything that I was doing before. At the end of the day, if I come back and just be confident and be who I was, everything will be fine. So I had that mentality and as I said, things were going and obviously I was developing well and as I said, now I feel good and great, so it's all good.
Let's take it back quickly to a joyous place because obviously we're talking to you just coming off the height of emotion and hopefully we can maybe burst through that ceiling and get even higher in emotion and it hopefully ends with you guys lifting the big ears over your head. But that locker room, we've talked to a couple players about the locker room dynamic right now. Such a positive vibe, everybody pulling on the same rope, a multicultural locker room, varying in ages. You guys have a really young core, but then it goes like all the way to the other spectrum and basically Aspie's like the median age, but then you have like these veterans like Thiago Silva and Olivier Giroud. What can you talk to us about that locker room dynamic right now at Chelsea Football Club?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's amazing. I think that obviously it's good that we have different cultures, different age groups because all of us, it's good to mingle with everybody. I think that as a team, we like to get to know other people's like what they get up to in their life off the pitch. Obviously, it's nice to know that all the other players, when they've come from a different country, you like to know what they used to do when they were in their country and stuff. And they like to get to know what we do here as well. So it's definitely nice. I think that the older players are very good for us because they're much more experienced and they get to give us their experience that they've gone through certain ways in life and how they manage certain things in life as well. So for all of us, it's good to know that we've got the older players there, the younger players there, just so we can mix in each age group. And I think that every player does that well. We mix well as a team. We gel well as a team. And nobody feels left out. We all feel together. We all feel as a strong group. So it's a nice feeling to know everyone's there for each other.
Callum, we're coming off of the back of a social media boycott that happened last weekend. You've experienced racial abuse online yourself. And steps have been taken to reduce some of these incidents. But do you almost have advice for anyone on how to not to receive it, because obviously it should never happen, but to kind of deal with it? Because I actually thought it was like over here, it made some headlines because it's almost like, well, you're not just accepting that this is a part of being on social media. It doesn't have to exist. But how have you kind of taken it on board when it has happened?
For myself, I always said that racism is a thing where it should never happen. And I said to myself, at the end of the day, we're all equal and we're all here to enjoy the sport. We all play the sport. We all like to watch the sport. So at the end of the day, we do our best as we can, all players. We do our best as we can on the pitch to try and get the results for the club and for the team as possible. So and especially we do it for the fans as well. As the pandemic's going on now, it's hard for fans to come and watch the games and stuff like that. So especially when we're, as I said, we're giving it our all. We're pushing day in, day out to try and get the right result. And obviously when the things don't go our way, sometimes it becomes harsh on social media. I think a lot of players see it and they think to themselves, what have we done wrong? Like, I get it, we've made a mistake, but we don't need to be criticised like this or being called certain words and certain names. It's hard. It hurts. It hurts a lot of players. It hurts everybody. I think every player who receives it. Sometimes people don't take notice of it. They try to leave it alone because it can affect them mentally. But as I said, I think the boycott thing that happened was good. I think that people on social media need to understand that everybody's trying to take this seriously and trying to understand that we don't want this in the game. We don't want it in not just in football, but in all parts of life. You know what I mean? So I think that all of us are trying our best to try and get out of sport as soon as possible, out of sport, out of everything, whatever it is. I think that everyone's trying to get out as quick as possible and hopefully we do that. And as I said, for myself, I don't like seeing that stuff. It's very brutal for all players who receive it. And it, as I said, it could take a toll on people mentally as well. So definitely trying to get out as soon as possible.
They're not just Titans on the pitch. They're real people. And I think over the last few weeks across the pond, we've seen the power that supporters' bases have. Patrick Bamford actually articulated, we've been throwing our hands up about eradicating racism, but Super League comes in and you're boycotting. Let's keep that same energy. Don't just be silent. That doesn't necessarily make you a good person. Call it out. I'm not telling you to get in a Twitter argument with somebody. Report things. We need to eradicate this together. Let the social media companies know. They have to do a better job with it, because I know that Chelsea offered counseling here. I can't even imagine what that must be like, especially for a younger player growing as an individual, maturing as a young man, and having to deal with the weight of that crest on your shirt. It's got to be a lot, Callum.
Yeah, definitely. I think to ourselves that, as you said, we're all human, we're all equal in the day. And when we're receiving stuff like that, it's very hurtful, because you think to yourself, all right, we're giving 110% in every game we play, and we do our best for the fans, for ourselves, for the team. We try and get points on board, and we try and go through to the next round. But for example, if it doesn't go our way, things get turned on to the players so quickly, and it hurts, because we're like, okay, we've done our best, but if we didn't get the result, we apologize and we go again the next game. So of course, it's definitely a thing where we've tried our best, we're trying our best to get out of the game. And we've always said that anything that happens between the racism, hopefully whoever has been given the abuse should get punished for it as well. And hopefully stuff like that happens as soon as possible. So as I said, we're just trying our best to try and get the result for the fans, for the team, for ourselves, and obviously do our best that we can.
Well said, Callum. I'm going to give you one more opportunity to talk to the supporters, because obviously this is a crazy moment in time with the men and women in the Champions League final. Even for you, going through the Academy product, I'm sure you have memories of 2012, and now you're there. Dreams are close to being achieved. Callum, I'm sure when you're just with a ball in your backyard or down the streets and you're doing the countdown in your head, extra time's winner for Callum Hudson-Odoi, the crowd goes wild. Just what can you say about the support that you've gotten? I know there's feels like a disconnect, right? It would have been great to see the bridge elated and exploding as Mason Mount scores that goal, assisted by Christian Pulisic. What can you deliver as far as the message goes to the Chelsea supporters out there?
No, to all the supporters out there, we always say thank you. Massive support. Thank you for your massive support always. I think that your support is being noticed by all of us. We see it, and obviously we wish you could have been there at the stadium yesterday, with the feeling that we had as well was going crazy. All of us wanted to enjoy on the pitch with you guys, the same way you guys would have been delighted to be there with us. So we always say thank you for watching and obviously supporting us day in, day out, whether it's training or in the game. So we really appreciate it. And obviously, hopefully we can do it for you guys and get the trophy, the two trophies at the end of the season. So we'll do our best. And as I said, thank you always.
Brilliant. Callum Hudson-Odoi, thank you so much for joining us here on Chelsea Mic'd Up, a dream guest for us, and we finally got you, and we got you the day after you punched your ticket to the Champions League final. A massive, massive credit to you, showing that you can deal with adversity and deal and overcome injury, and now here you are on the precipice of achieving childhood dreams. I couldn't be more happy for you guys on the team. You guys deserve it so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is Mason Mount, and you're listening to Chelsea Mic'd Up, the official podcast of the Blues.
All right, we broke down Arsenal, Chelsea. We spoke to Callum Hudson-Odoi. Really cool catching up with him. That was moments after, basically, they punched their ticket to the Champions League final on the men's side. Now let's talk about the big matches coming up this weekend for Chelsea Football Club on the men's and women's side. We begin with the big one, the biggest match in club history, the Champions League final against Barcelona. Barcelona are amazingly talented. They are your champions on the domestic side. They've had a pretty easy run outside of maybe that PSG clash. Jennifer Hermoso is the leading scorer in this competition for Barcelona and the leading scorer in La Liga for Barcelona. So it's a very, very difficult draw. Another cool bit of trivia is the club that wins this automatically becomes the first ever club to win the most prestigious club trophy on the men's and women's side. Chelsea have the unbelievable opportunity to pull that off in the same year, and that record may stand forever. Obviously, I caught a little bit of flack by saying Chelsea have the opportunity to be the greatest club ever because that got aggregated, because it was just a social media clip. Look, Lyon, I think, what, did they win 5 Champions Leagues in a row? They are, on the balance of history, the greatest women's side ever. No one's disputing that. But in terms of individual achievements for one season, one team, that is what's on the line for Chelsea Football Club headed into this clash against Barcelona, Chris.
And we're also at the beginning of this Chelsea team's development, right? They've only just begun adding at like the very highest level. They announced a signing this morning in Aniek Nguyen, joining the Dutch defender, presumably bolstering that back line. So, I mean, we're only seeing kind of the beginning of this Chelsea era. And I do think that in terms of achievement, winning a Champions League in this COVID season, being so strong on all domestic fronts, winning the most difficult European club league to win, you know, winning already the Conti Cup, potentially a women's FA Cup as well. They do a quadruple in this league, in this COVID season. It is up there with one of the greatest seasons of all time. So I do think it would be an enormous sense of achievement. But the thing is, oh, you're holding up five fingers.
Yeah, I'm doing the Mourinho.
You're not counting the community shield? I'm not counting the community shield.
How dare you? That was basically a championship game against Manchester City and Chelsea to kick off the year. It was a brilliant game. I'm holding up the five. This is five trophies in the season, Chris.
All right, going full Booker T then. It would be an enormous achievement if Chelsea can pull this off, and one of the greatest seasons of all time. You can debate, obviously, the strength of those Lyon teams. They're incredible. They've done amazing work in the women's game, and in some respects, the European club game, they are kind of the pioneers of taking it seriously. So fair play to them, but I think Chelsea deserve all the credit. But as you said, this Champions League is immensely difficult. You go through Barcelona's run. They played PSV in the round of 32, won 8-2 on aggregate. They played Fortuna Hioring? They won 9-0 on aggregate in the round of 16. They beat Manchester City 4-2 on aggregate in the quarterfinal, and they just beat PSG 3-2. PSG, another immensely strong side. So this is a very difficult competition. I was actually just watching the highlights from their second leg against PSG. They've got great attacking quality. You don't want to play them in their place, but it's at a neutral venue. So I'm really looking forward to how these two teams match up. I think it's going to be an immensely competitive game going all the way down to the end. I think these are two fairly evenly matched teams.
And if you want to catch up on Chelsea's run, maybe this is the first match. I imagine that's going to be the deal for a lot of people headed into this final on Sunday, Chris, is let me see what this Chelsea women's team is all about. Let me give you a brief primer. They've obviously won the league back-to-back seasons. Emma Hayes, a long-tenured coach. Their path to the final in the Champions League, absolutely destroying Benfica. Then they got over Atletico Madrid. Berger with two penalty saves in that clash. Really, if you look at it, that might have been, for a lesser team, a stumbling block, but they didn't fall. And then they overcame Wolfsburg, which historically has been the fly in the ointment for Emma Hayes and Chelsea Football Club. And then the semifinal, a classic final 15 minutes to punch their ticket to this final. We're glad you were bored. No judgment. I think, not to dilute the achievements of Lyon, and obviously groundbreaking in every sense of the word in the club game on the women's side, but this is really the first full year that the Women's Super League is drawing stars away from the United States. This is undoubtedly the best domestic league in the world right now that Chelsea sit atop of. More resources are pumping into this game because of the achievements of teams like Lyon. Now, the entire complexion of the Champions League has changed, though. I'm not saying it's more difficult, but more resources bring in more talent, so I'm not diluting those achievements. But the game has changed quite a bit here recently in Europe.
No doubt. I mean, you're seeing clubs like Chelsea, clubs like Atletico Madrid, clubs like Paris Saint-Germain really have a go in this competition. So it is incredible how much the competition has evolved. And like, for example, you would expect Lyon, Wolfsburg, Bayern Munich be at the top of this competition year in and year out. And now that field is going to expand. It's going to grow. And this final is kind of the first sign of it, with Barcelona in the final, with Chelsea in the final. I think you're going to see an expansion of this club, and it's going to start to resemble the men's Champions League a bit more, because honestly, it's taken too long. But these clubs are now investing, and so you're seeing a real development in the women's game. So I think this final is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, great teams, great teams. Let's turn our attention to the men's side. On the men's side, we got a trophy on the line against Leicester City, who had an impressive win in the league against Manchester United. Manchester United ticking off a lot of fan bases with their team selection, and fair play to them. They've had a decent season, pretty much in line for a second place finish in the Premier League. Are they just playing out this string? Chelsea got to do it themselves. Okay.
Well, I mean, they're playing three games in 5 days. Like, one of the games had to be the game where you rested everyone. And look, actually, Manchester United, you know, were level after 15 minutes. They were competitive, but, I mean, they basically decided, you know what, we've got to kind of take this game a little bit easy because we're playing Liverpool in 2 days. And if you're saying beat Leicester, beat Liverpool, if you're Manchester United, you beat Liverpool every time.
And fair play to Leicester. They just dropped a result to Newcastle headed into this. And while it wasn't the strongest Man United team, still loaded with talent. And they did the job there. This is a team that I've got in my crosshairs right now as Bottle Job City. And they're hanging on, and that was a massive result for them. But now, totally different competition. And where this, in years past, has been called a Mickey Mouse trophy. Can you imagine talking about the FA Cup that way with all its history? This is a massive trophy for both clubs, but undeniably a huge achievement for Leicester City. Goes down in the record books as their second largest achievement in club history, I think.
Yeah, we kind of have gotten used to Leicester being good. I don't think, you know, our listeners probably realize, you know, you go before they won that league title. First off, they struggled to stay in the league the season before they won the league. And since then, they've been a really consistent club. Not always at the very top of the Premier League, but the FA Cup and the significance of its achievement is kind of born for clubs like Leicester, right? This is what they aim for, is to win a trophy like this. And they've kind of become accustomed now to, oh, now we can have a seat at the Champions League table, that maybe the FA Cup doesn't feel the same. No, it's a massive deal for those supporters and for that club to have that final this weekend. And Leicester, for them, if you can say top four and a trophy, like, that's the second greatest season in their club's history. It's absolutely incredible for them to have managed
this. It'd be a good season for Chelsea.
Yeah,
it'd be a good
absolutely.
Season for Chelsea, Chris. So we'd certainly take that. And obviously, Chelsea have worked so hard. You make it to a Champions League final. You got this top four battle in the Premier League, but you really want to come away with a trophy. This is your first stab at it. And I know we've been reading 2012 tea leaves the entire season, but Manchester City won the league in 2012, and Chelsea won the FA Cup against Liverpool prior to that dramatic final against Bayern Munich in 2012. So if you want to keep the 2012 train going, it means you got to win this. And I don't think it's a diluted trophy for Chelsea either. It's obviously Thomas Tuchel's first opportunity at winning a trophy. It's a lot of players that have been key contributors that made it to the final last year against Arsenal and fell just short. Christian Pulisic's hammy might have turned that game around and made it a different result, but this is Mason Mount's first opportunity to lift a trophy over his head. This is massive for this club, and it's a bit of confidence going into that Champions League final against Manchester City. Couple that with the result of a couple of days ago, their win over Manchester City at the Etihad. And it was curious to see how much Manchester City supporters respected the pandemic. We didn't expect the drama of Liverpool's title celebration, but one sad person playing a saxophone in front of 20 people wasn't exactly what I had in mind.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the most stirring of scenes. It's also like such an anticlimactic way to win the league. An early afternoon kickoff on a Tuesday, and they lose. It's like, okay,
I hear you, and you're obviously giving voice to the neutrals here, Chris, and I appreciate that. But, you know, Liverpool won it the same anticlimactic way, and they just had a lot of history. I think really what was the anticlimactic part here, even though it was the same case for Liverpool last year, so if I'm doing my shopping comparison, it doesn't really quite compute. I don't know what I'm doing. It's kind of irresponsible. Why aren't you gathering in mass outside of the stadium? But, you know, Manchester City have a reputation. Slight banter here.
Yeah.
From one.
You certainly have earned it on the basis of having won twice in 2 weeks here against Manchester City.
Yeah, but let's talk about this final. Obviously, you're in agreement with me. There's no Mickey Mouse coding over this competition. It's a massive final. It's going to be great to see fans inside of Wembley Stadium again. And whoever wins is going to lift this trophy in front of some supporters. I know there's all sorts of questions as to who's allowed from which city where. It's very complicated, but there's going to be ambiance. There's going to be atmosphere that's going to be jumping across your television screens, and that is a major step in the right direction. So, Chris, two massive games, a huge week, arguably the biggest 10-day stretch in club history here for Chelsea Football Club. Let's make our predictions headed into these cup finals. We begin with the FA Cup final, Leicester City against Chelsea FC. Reminder, if you want to make predictions on this game and others, go to the Fizzsand app, the official Chelsea app, and play the Play Predictor game for your shot at cool prizes. Chris, we begin with your prediction in the FA Cup.
I just think that Chelsea enter this match in a better state than Leicester do. And I know Leicester just came off a massive win against Manchester United. It was a reserve Manchester United team. Leicester, I think, are just about struggling to get over the line. The Johnny Evans absence is huge for them. I think if they're going to win games of this magnitude, they have to be at full strength and on their best form. And I just don't think they are right now. So I think given the strength that Chelsea have, you know they're going to field their very best team. I think that they win this FA Cup final, and I'll say that they do so by 2-1.
I think both teams feel the strong team. Injury questions surrounding Kovacic and Christensen. I know Christensen, with that tendon injury, is targeting a return for this cup match with such a huge Champions League final. Maybe you play it safe with him. Kovacic, I think, will be available for this game. The Evans injury is a big one. But headed into this final, I just have a feeling Chelsea got some drama in them. And I'm going to make this blanket prediction, spoiler alert here, for the next two finals. I think both go into extra time. Wow. I don't think this one goes into PKs. Maybe the job gets some, but I think we're going to be tied after 90 minutes. But I think it's going to be kind of a dull tie. I'm going 0-0 on 90 minutes, and then Chelsea find a way in extra time to get it done. So Chelsea, the FA Cup winners, just like 2012. Let's turn our attention now to the biggest club match for the women's side in their history. Emma Hayes has been crawling through foxholes and barbed wire and explosives to get here and has a very talented team, the most talented team in Chelsea history. And oh, by the way, here come Barcelona. And in the last emergency pod that we did, I kind of glossed over their goal differential. What? In the league? What? Was it 128-5? Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I'll check it again just in case.
Is that the greatest goal differential in any league's history?
I mean, and by the way, I think they still have like 5 or 6 matches left to play. Yeah, they have. Yeah,
they've conceded five times?
Yes, they've conceded 5 times in the league. Correct.
Oh, that's scary. They're good.
They have 4 games left to play. They're unbeaten. They've conceded 5 times, and they scored 128.
That's unreal. That should not be glossed over. I kind of said that.
When I read that last week, I should have stopped. No, you need to hear this.
Yeah, maybe
plus 123 goal difference.
Maybe during recording, I was just thinking about what the next thing I was going to say was, because when I listened back to the pod, I was like, wait, what? Do you mean 28-5? So, Barcelona, for a team that I haven't really watched much this year, you can't really get more impressive than that goal differential domestically. This seems like an absolute juggernaut, but I am going to be clouded in homerism here, Chris. I'll let you make the neutral pick. I got my heart on my sleeve. We've gotten to know this team through interviews. We interviewed Emma Hayes and many of the star players here. We hope to interview more, hopefully for a championship celebration. I'm going 2-1 Chelsea lifting the Champions League trophy.
I'm going to make the prediction that you made for the men's side on the women's side. Extra time between these two teams. And I think Chelsea pull it out in the end. I'm going for an entertaining one as well. Chelsea have played some high-scoring affairs in the Champions League. So following extra time, Chelsea win it 3-2.
I feel like the goal production, and I should look this up, but a different defense just in terms of how it's jumping off the screen without Marimelda. That seems to be a pretty big injury for Chelsea. So they come in here, obviously trying to lift this trophy for their fallen teammate who is out injured. It's going to be tough. Jennifer Hermoso is not to be taken lightly. This is an absolute unreal player. Several years running, she's come away with a golden boot in her domestic league, which I believe is called Primera Femenina or something like that. I think the Barcelona team is Barcelona Femenina or something like that.
Femenil, I think is how they say it.
Femenil. I'm sorry. I have Spanish blood in me, and I totally botched that. But when they start talking with the TH sound,
I don't think people know that the differences between Spanish speakers, like Spain, Spanish from Spain is almost an entirely different language from the one we're used to.
Look, I took a Spanish class in high school and it confused me even more. I thought I knew Spanish. I'm like, what? Vosotros? I've never used vosotros.
Yeah. Anytime anyone from a non-Spanish country encounters vosotros, you're like, wait, vosotros? What is that?
Yeah, and I've told you before, you stick an Argentine in front of me and they start speaking Spanish to me, they might as well be speaking Mandarin. I don't know what the hell's going on. All right, so that's your prediction. Extra time. Did you have Chelsea lift in the cup, though?
I did, yeah. 3-2.
Yeah, you're
3-2,
emotional.
3-2 after extra time.
You're not neutral when it comes to this women's team. I think because of the relationships we fortified on this season of Chelsea Mic'd Up, you're a true blue on the women's side.
It's my first exposure to the WSL. Like I didn't really follow the league very much until I started working on this podcast, and we just wanted to start covering women's football. And I've developed a connection to this player and to the players, to the team, to the manager. And yeah, I really hope that they win on Sunday.
Lots of great content creators out there for Chelsea Football Club. The club is blessed to have so many great content creators, and we're blessed to have such a club this season, right? It's been a dream season. We know there's a lot at the buffet. London is Blue do a terrific job with their podcast. We're ramping up our output, not just to keep pace, but it's exciting. These are great games. These are knots in your stomach matches, and we want to be there alongside you for the ride. It's going to be a dramatic one. So anytime something of note happens on that pitch, you can expect more emergency pods here in the coming weeks as we all build up to epic crescendo of the Men's Champions League final, an all-English final, a dramatic clash between Manchester City and Chelsea FC. So lots of episodes to look out for. Make sure you follow our feed, rate and review it. We appreciate your feedback and share it with your friends in your WhatsApp groups. They are buzzing over the last few months here as Thomas Tuchel has lifted Chelsea to highs that didn't really seem possible in January. Till we speak again, up the Chels.